My name is Anthony Marco, and welcome to TV ABCs, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, TVA's Greg David has a conversation with Trevor Boris. Trevor Boris is probably most known from his days on Much Music's Video on Trial and his stand-up years, where he appeared on Conan and Just for Laughs, among countless other television appearances. Now Trevor is more known for his work behind the camera as a supervising producer on Big Brother Canada, a challenge producer on Big Brother US, and a director on Hockey Wives. We'll hear about all of this and more in Greg's conversation with Trevor Boris, who you can follow on Twitter at Trevor Boris.
So Trevor, thanks for taking the time to talk to me. First of all, congratulations on everything. And second of all, you are an incredibly busy guy.
Well, thanks for having me. I am busy, but I feel like that's... you have to be in this country, don't you? I think you just have to like say yes to everything and just be busy, busy, busy. Because if you stop, then work again. I don't know, that's not cool. Maybe that's bad. Maybe I shouldn't be like that.
Well, it's really interesting because the first time that I ever saw you on TV was Video on Trial on Much Music, which I, looking at your IMDb page or your own website, that almost seems like a lifetime ago almost.
It is almost like a different life. I mean, that was, you know, like my start was in stand-up, right? So that's what,
yeah.
I did stand-up for 15 years. You know, which led into doing a lot of TV stuff, and that I was really lucky. But it does, now that I'm, you know, kind of totally on the other side of the camera, it does feel like a different part. Like, I'll watch some of that stuff, and I almost don't remember it. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we're going to get to...
a lot funnier.
Pardon me?
I'm always like, oh, I used to be a lot funnier than I am now.
It's because reality TV, man. The Big Brother machine is grinding you down.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So the other reason I wanted to talk to you was, of course, you're deeply involved in Big Brother Canada and have been for a couple of seasons. You've also been involved with Big Brother down in the U.S. So obviously, you know, lots of questions about that. But before we get to that, was television something that you always wanted to do? I mean, certainly if you're a stand-up comedian, there's always, you know, the chance of getting a special on the Comedy Network or something like that. Is that something you were aiming for? Did you want to be on TV?
I didn't even really know I wanted to do stand-up until I'd been doing it like 5 years. So, nothing was ever been planned even now. I went to University of Winnipeg and was kind of doing stand-up. You know, I started as a dare and then I kind of just did it as a hobby. I had a couple buddies that were really close and we were all doing stand-up. So, you know, I just really never even thought of it outside of Winnipeg, to be honest. Like, so Rumors is this great comedy club in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And all I really knew about comedy was, you know, the people I saw on TV and the people who came through there. And there were some great people like Nikki Payne and Pete Sedlacker and Sean Cullen. But I never really thought, you know, beyond Winnipeg. And it was honestly, I look back now and it seems weird, but it was like, you know, 4 years of that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like Nikki Payne, who's a good friend, she came and she was like, you know, oh, you're funny, you should come to Toronto. And so I went to visit her and then did some shows. And, you know, right away, people like Mark Breslin was like, you know, why aren't you living here and stuff. And then so I went back, and then like 6 months later, I moved to Toronto. And again, not really even thinking like that was like, maybe I was just really dumb back then.
Yeah.
No, I just wasn't really thinking. And then so I just moved, and, you know, I was really lucky because 6 months in, I got Video on Trial. And that was really what, you know, changed everything. It really opened a lot of doors, gave me a quick profile, started doing colleges, started doing other TV. Gave me writing gigs. So, it, that was the real kind of gift was that. I was doing fine as a stand-up, but, you know, that there weren't a lot of TV shows back then, and probably still not even now, where you get constant exposure on TV. I mean, Video on Trial. I mean, for a while, in the very beginning, it was doing huge numbers. It was like, mm-hmm. There was one Christmas time where 16 of the top 20 shows on Much Music were all Video on Trials. And they were getting like 250,000 views, some of them. Like, it was a huge number for Much Music. So so that was the real big break. And it's funny because, I still don't really know how it happened because I was so new to Toronto. And I know someone had recommended me for it to the producer because I did the first episode. Mm-hmm. I was really a bit of a pilot. And I still don't really know how that came about because I wasn't really on the scene. Like, there were so many funnier people who were established at the time. So we never really figured out who kind of was my guardian angel there, but
So did you audition for Video on Trial, or did they come to you and say, listen, you know, we think that you're good and we want you to do this?
Yeah, it was really just like the producer saying, you know, we're kind of going to shoot this show. Would you be into it? And then, so yeah, I did the first, and it was that really, the pilot was really the first episode.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it went great. And then I did the episode 4, and none of these had aired yet. And then that was really it. Like, you know, to them, it started off somewhat small. Like, there wasn't a huge pool of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I was really lucky that, like, me and Deborah got in really early.
Yeah.
And we were kind of staples. And it ran 9 years. I mean, it's kind of a crazy thing. I mean, I did, like, 110 episodes of it out of, like, 220. You know, there was tons of spinoffs and specials. And, I mean, it really, really was a blast because as much as it's what everyone knew me from, it was also a very small part of my schedule. Like, I really you know, once or twice a week, and then I would be doing other shows. And so for the small amount of time, it paid off in a really big way.
Well, the other thing about it is that on Much, it would be in an endless loop, it seemed like. Anytime you tuned in, an episode was on.
Yeah. It was on all the time. I mean, it definitely was on every day, and like numerous times. So, and it was, I mean, the beauty of the show too was it was something that you could just like, you know, you don't have, you can start it halfway through and you watch
yeah.
10 minutes, and it was just like an easy thing. And it was something everyone was doing at home anyway. Like everyone was on their couch yelling at their
yeah.
music. It was so beautiful because, you know, music videos are so terrible. Like they're mm-hmm. so over the top. Nothing is based in reality. So it just was kind of like this perfect, you know, fodder for, you know, for Much Music. It was great because it was super cheap.
Yeah.
You know? They weren't really paying us much. And it was a green screen, and then they had to use their content anyway, so it was such a win-win. And of course, for us, it was great because it, you know, indirectly it gave us, you know, I started making tons more on college circuits, and I was getting other TV, so I knew the value. It's funny because I look back, and there were a couple comics who were very established, and they kind of like, you know, they looked down on that show, and they were like, I don't want to do it. Didn't pay much, and I'm above it. And
right.
I laugh because they just didn't see the value of it. Like I always saw, okay, this is not going to pay a lot. And in the end it was paying fair, but you know, it paid me so much indirectly. Like it's crazy to me that people can't see the value of even like, you know, I did Conan. That was,
yeah.
I got like $800 for doing Conan.
Yeah.
Are you going to turn down Conan? Cause it only pays $800.
Right. Right.
You gotta say, not everything pays in cash is kind of what I would say.
Well, you know, and that, you know, not only are you on that show and getting tons of exposure, but that's also giving you, I'm sure, invaluable information behind the scenes of how to make television, which is, you know, that's the way that you kind of segue into going from producer to from writer to producer, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how I started. I started producing that show. So, you know, I produced Video on Trial for like a year and a half, which again was kind of a win-win for me because I was, you know, I was in all those episodes,
yeah.
And I had full control of my edit. So, you know, fans may have noticed, oh, there's lots of Trevor this year. And it's like, well, it's because I'm making the show now.
And, that's hilarious.
You know, and then just that. I mean, Much Music is also this really great, like, because again, yeah, like, you know, I mean, producing now is what I do. But
yeah.
I didn't go to TV school or anything. But Much Music was such the perfect university for that because it really was, you know, a really easygoing, you know, people, they let you really think outside the box and do crazy stuff. And you got to do stuff on live TV. Like I also did a lot of, you know, producing for like live hits and things
sure.
like that. And the MMVAs and all that stuff. So it was such an awesome kind of training ground because they weren't super precious. I mean, it got more so once Bell bought it. But back in mm-hmm. the Chum days, it was really like, it was a really super cool place.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of legendary how everybody just kind of got dropped into that environment and you had to learn everything on the fly and everybody had to do a little bit of everything. You couldn't really specialize there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and you just had freedom and mm-hmm. freedom to be creative and wacky and funny. So, you know, for me, that was, you know, to kind of get that in. I mean, I also saw the real value in terms of like, you know, going into producing, you know, there's a lot of comics who just really want to be the star. They
yeah.
really just the comic and they want and that's totally great. But I always looked at it as like I'm just trying to have more tools in the tool belt. Like, you know, I started doing writing gigs. I wrote a lot of Juno Awards and MMVAs and Walk of Fames and all that stuff. And producing, I was like, this will make me better on air. And it did. You know, so to me it was also about, you know, like there's not, you know, really there's not a lot of money in stand up. And, you know, when I started doing producing stuff, it was kind of a great way to have like a really great gig, but it also, again, yeah, made me better on camera, and I just learned a lot more. And I always thought, like, if I ever got my own show, you know, now I'd really know what network wants and things like that. So I always saw, again, like a lot of value in everything. So.
So what about the move from writer to producer? Did that just kind of happen organically and you all of a sudden found yourself doing more producing than writing, or was that a conscious decision on your part and you wanted to make that move?
I definitely wanted to. I mean, I'd been doing stand-up for a long time and I loved it. I always kind of felt like it was not something I was going to do forever. Like,
okay.
I certainly was like, you know, I definitely did not want to be in my 40s either doing college shows or community halls and stuff like that, and like to pay bills.
Yeah.
And I got the sense that, you know, I mean, I wasn't going to be doing, you know, tons of crazy specials and getting my own, like, you know, I mean, as openly gay too, it's a little tougher. I mean, I knew it was a little niche-y in a sense. And again, I was lucky to have done, you know, I did like four Just for Laughs galas or three, Conan, and I toured the world and that kind of stuff. So I kind of felt like I had taken it to kind of where it was going to go. And then I loved producing. I really loved being on that side of things. And I realized it kind of scratched the itch of things like I can travel, I can be creative, I can do all those things that I was really loving about stand-up. So in terms of writing was the really easy lead-in from stand-up, of course, because they think writer. So it was easy to get those kind of gigs. And then, you know, to get into video on trial, that was that first big, you know, producing break. And I did that for, you know, again, a year and a half. And I also got to produce a whole bunch of other stuff at Much. And then I guess my first other like real, the problem though is when you start doing that, it's hard for people to see you and take you seriously as a producer.
Right.
So I think it took a long time to get seen as not just a stand up. So that was always a bit of struggle. So, I mean, I've worked a lot with Insight Productions, who they're like family, and that's now, and they've been really great to me. And that was another one of my first big moves was, Canada's Got Talent, which I'm a host producer. So that was, you know, I was the host producer for, Dina, who's amazing. So that was really great for me. I also wrote that show. And then it kind of just rolled from there. So it kind of took a little while. I definitely needed a few producer credits to kind of start really being taken seriously, you know?
Yeah, and I came down to several of the tapings for Canada's Got Talent, and I was disappointed when it was canceled because I felt like that franchise still had a lot of life in it. You know, how do you feel about that? I mean, obviously you came out the other side okay, and you'd gotten even more experience, but do you feel like it had run its course and maybe you could have been more successful if it was on another network?
I don't know. I mean, I loved that show, and
yeah.
Maybe it turned out Canada doesn't have much talent. No, we had one season's worth.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, it was fun. And, I think there were a couple things. Like, you know, I do know the network wanted it to be really positive. And so, you know, it was kind of a bit of a yes-a-thon. And so, you know, we had, I remember, you know, in the beginning, we had all these great buzz acts. And you know, and that's the show's about that, especially early on. And I think, you know, they just really wanted it super feel-good and... But I think it was great and it was really interesting. I would have loved to have seen it go on in a couple more seasons. I think a first season of anything is really tough. Like, yes,
sure.
Of course that franchise has been going forever, but you know, to do it your own, it's, you know, it takes a season to kind of really find your legs. And I think, you know, I thought it was really great. I thought Dina was amazing. Martin Short was awesome. And we had cool, you know, cool judges and really interesting acts and some people who, you know, we found some real stars. And it would have been really great to get one more year just to kind of really see what that next season would have looked like. But, you know, it happens and it's tough. It's a big show and, you know, sure. I'm sure it wasn't cheap. And
Right. Okay. So let's take a little break before we get into the whole Big Brother franchise. One of the things that we do when we're recording this podcast is that usually I'm recording this with Anthony Marco and we're doing it at night. So it's been after a long day, and usually, but not always, we're settling down and having some kind of an adult beverage while we're recording. So I want to find out from you, in the evenings when you're winding down, although it sounds as though you're pretty busy and don't really get a chance to wind down. But when you do wind down, what are you drinking? Does it have alcohol in it? Is it tea? What is it that you like to drink when you're relaxing?
Well, I'm a true prairie boy, so I drink rye and Coke.
Oh, okay.
Like, I am full on. Yeah, that is my go-to. It's like regular Coke, but makes me want to fight. So that's totally my go-to. And it's funny because when I moved to Toronto, I feel like nobody really, and this was a while ago, but nobody understood Ryan Coke. It was a weird thing. But people are coming around now. But
yeah, I like Ryan Ginger Ale.
Oh, okay. And people usually give me that. And then I'm always like, no, I asked for Ryan Coke.
Right.
So I feel like that's maybe not, because, and I'd never heard of that in Manitoba. I'd never heard of the ginger ale.
Any particular kind of rye, or are you a discerning guy when it comes to that, or no?
Yeah, I mean, probably Crown is really the only thing I drink.
Okay.
I'm a fancy prairie boy. it's like fancy, but still like gross, right? I mean, it's like.
Well, and here in Toronto now, you can get some lime in it. I don't know whether you were able to get lime in Winnipeg back in the day.
No, there's no limes, no lemons.
That's, right.
You'd be called gay for putting...
No citrus fruit in Winnipeg at all.
That's true, yeah.
Okay, so let's get to the one of the main reasons that I wanted to talk to you. Obviously, going over your career is fun, but let's talk about what's going on now. Big Brother, the Big Brother franchise. Now, how did you become involved in it? Was that once you were working... Like, are you working at Insight now? As like a full-time employee?
I've never been a full-time.
I'm just okay.
Tracks. And so what happened, I mean, it was actually kind of interesting. I've been a huge Big Brother fan, you know, since early days of the U.S. and
yeah.
It's been on years now. You know, I've always loved it. You know, never really thought about like working on it or anything. And then, but when I found out, and so I've been doing some stuff with Insight, again, like I've Got Talent and a few little side gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out they were doing it, and I just, you know, I emailed right away saying, I need to be involved any way possible. I love this show. And I kind of lucked out. So the executive producers here, you know, on Insight, you know, they do a lot of big formats, all the biggest shows, right? Like Race and Chef and all these shows, and they Canadian Idol, all these huge shows.
Yeah.
So they're very familiar and comfortable doing big formats, but a lot of the people weren't super familiar with the Big Brother franchise. So I kind of lucked out that, you know, they definitely wanted some people who knew the show. But it was interesting. So at first, you know, they hired me on as part of the casting team, season one.
Yeah.
So I was one of the casting producers. And then, you know, we were out doing the tour. And, you know, Robin Cass, who puts together the cast in the U.S., she does our show as well.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. And then, you know, Aaron Brock, who's one of the executive producers here, the showrunner, And we hadn't even met. Like, I was very familiar with, you know, a lot of the other top producers.
Here. Yeah.
We hadn't even met, and she, you know, she's show running the show, and, you know, she'd heard about me, and then just on a call, she just happened to throw out, hey, like, would you do challenges?
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I'd never even thought, even though I wanted to be on the show, and I was always obsessed with, like, Survivor challenges, and I'd always loved all that. I never really thought, you know, I knew I loved it, but never thought that that's what I would do. But, of course, on the call, I was like, yeah, of course I'd love to. And it was really, that was it. Like, I kind of just lucked out that it kind of popped into her head. And, you know, I think they thought, you know, we definitely want to bring a lot of comedy to it. So I think, you know, that was kind of where it came from. So, and that was really it, you know. So I've always been in challenge world. Like, you know, now I'm, you know, like supervising producer. So I, you know, I run the department and I work on the creative, you know, of the series as a whole and other things. But, you know, I've always been in the challenge world, and, you know, it's been it's such a gift. Like, it's super fun. Like, literally all day, you know, we try and think of ways to kind of mentally and physically torture these people.
Yeah.
Push them to their limits. And, you know, like the U.S., they really do a lot of the same comps over and over. And I think here, of course, we're trying to differentiate ourselves and really stand out and be different, because obviously the same people watching our show watch the U.S.
Yeah.
So we need a way to make it our own. And so, what's been really cool is, like, you know, I get a lot of creative license to just be so different and think outside the box and do things that they wouldn't do down there. So that's been kind of the real treat. And, you know, the network's been amazing, and everyone here, like, they really kind of let us go to town and do some crazy wild stuff.
So what makes a good challenge to you, Trevor?
Well, I mean, obviously it should be like, you know, I always think it should be fun to play and fun to watch. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of really the big thing. I think our fans, again, who have seen so many seasons, they've seen, you know, say 10 to 15 seasons of the U.S. and now a bunch of ours. It's, you know, like, of course, you know, there's a really tight framework that it has to work within. There's got to be a clear winner, and it's in this backyard where we're not allowed to talk to them. And, or you know, I talk to them over a speaker, but we're not allowed to be in there. And there's all these things about it that really, you know, kind of handcuff you in a certain way. You know, it's not like Amazing Race where you're out in the world and you can really embrace, you know, the country you're in.
Yeah.
But the other beauty is, you know, it's a blank slate every week. Mm-hmm. Anything, you know, so you've got this box that's super controlled and you can do anything. And, you know, the advantage that we have over the U.S. is because it's winter, you know, of course the backyard is closed in. It's a studio.
Yeah.
So it lets us do a lot of stuff with like lighting and that. So, you know, over the last couple of years, I don't know if people really pay attention, but, you know, we've really done some cool lighting looks and playing with mood and atmosphere and all this kind of stuff and fire and all these things that they actually could not do in the U.S. because it's an open air backyard. And, you know, they deal with things like shadows. It's terrible.
Yes.
Time of day and all that. I mean, that was terrible. I mean, it's so hot there. You can't do things with metal because it burns your hand if you touch it.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's the kind of things that, but, and what's fun is the great thing is it can be anything. Like, we've done stuff. I mean, one day, you know, it's like an Indiana Jones thing where they're in this giant volcano and it's their family members playing for them. And the next day it's, you know, I don't know. They're giant bumblebees. You know, like, really, I think what's fun is it's such a theater of the absurd.
Yeah.
And people embrace that. And, you know, we love playing with scale. So everything is like usually like this, we take the scale completely out of proportion. And
yeah,
it's silly. And I think, but, you know, so we're always looking for something that's fun for them as well. Obviously, it's very stakesy.
Right.
Their life's on the line. This is where the power comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people don't play for the comps. They try and really play a social game, and that's fine. But, you know, when your life's on the line, it does come down to a comp to save your butt. So, you know, we do take it super seriously as well. Obviously, we test, and everything has to be super fair, and it's hard. Fair is a bit of a relative word. I mean, you know, there's a big, tall dude who's super, like, if this season, like, a big boxer guy. He's obviously super athletic, and he's, like, he's going to do better in certain comps. But then in an endurance comps, those – you know, definitely favor tiny people, so little girls. Yes. So, you know, it's all relative in terms of the course of the season. You know, there's going to be some that really play well to you in your hand, and then the next one it doesn't. You know, like, I think one, yeah, so that, you know, it's just all that kind of stuff you're trying to really take into consideration. And, you know, it's a lot of money on the line. They're giving up months of their life to do this. So, you know, we take it very seriously, and it's, but, you know, try to also just have a lot of fun with it. And that's what we, you know, the hard work that we're doing hopefully comes off as just really silly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, it's always fun to watch. So how many people do you have on your staff to come up with the challenges? That's got to be a fun room of people.
Yeah. I mean, I work most of the year on this show. So a lot of it, it's just myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. It's like me. Yeah. Like me in a room, just like, you know, thinking of dumb ideas. And then
the
problem is no one's there to say that's a dumb idea. So,
right.
Normally you have other people going, oh, that's too weird. But now, you know, I've got two challenge producers and then a couple other associate producers and stuff. And so a lot of it really gets fleshed out as a group, and then a huge, you know, amazing wardrobe team and special effects team and construction. I mean, there's like 100, 150 people kind of in my department.
Wow.
And it's really what's crazy. I mean, there's just so much behind the scenes that, you know, people don't realize because, you know, the game's happening.
Yes.
And the backyard is this really precious place that, you know, it's needed for the game because you need other places to strategize and because they're all cooped up.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we need the backyard to set up. And sometimes it takes a couple of days to set up these huge challenges. And so we're always kind of, you know, wrestling with that versus, you know, the house leaving time for the backyard and the hot tub area and all that. So we're always like under the gun schedule wise, and you know, it's a crazy dance and a crazy puzzle to put together, and you know, it's stressful but fun. But what's also really great about it is I love how live it is. You know, like
we
did a challenge a couple days ago that was just the most fun, and it airs tonight, and so it's really exciting to see it kind of play out that quickly. And then, of course, you know, some of our challenges actually start live.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always fun and stressful.
Yeah. And, yeah. Well, and this...
You never know. I mean, the thing is, it's so unknown. Like, these, you never know. We test and things like that, but you never know how they're going to react. You never know what they're going to do. You know, our rules are like, it's like legalese. Like, really, you know, because they'll always look for loopholes. They'll always look for little ways to get an edge. And, you know, it's a funny little world, you know, like.
Yeah. And speaking of the world, I mean, the set this season is out of this world. I mean, it is just incredible. And then just having the Have Not Room revealed recently. I mean, that's just crazy how great Odyssey looks.
Yeah, no, we're really happy. I think it's our strongest theme. I mean, so the idea is that it's very much space and time. So we're
really
with kind of the elasticity of time. So all of our twists, which are called shockwaves, are also kind of playing with time. So of course, that first one was someone got, you know, sent into the future. They're safe till jury, which is meta.
Now, yes,
we've got something else coming up pretty soon, and that's going to be really cool. Never been done in the world, and. So it's fun. I mean, it keeps the house guests on their toes, and you know, I think fans love it. And I think having a strong theme is really great. It really, you know, something like space, which is, you know, I mean, like, what's cooler than space?
Right.
Although, also, what I kind of laugh at is, like, you know, we all have this idea of space and spaceships and all that, but it's all kind of fake, right?
Sure.
Like, really, what is space? Is just nothing.
Yeah.
No one goes to space. Like, we're all like, there's all these ideas and all these movies. It's all kind of, it's all really make-believe, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I love the fact that you said shaking things up, because with so many so many seasons of both shows, US and Canada, that have already aired, you know, these players go in with certain expectations, and you really have to shake up those expectations to make it not only interesting for them, but interesting for the viewers as well. So you guys are really knocking it out of the park when it comes to that.
Well, that's especially with people who have played before, you know,
yeah.
They come in and they think they know what they're doing. It's like they come in. And they're like, yeah, I came in third before. It's going to be a cakewalk. And I think, you know, we're always looking for ways to flip the script on them. A part of that is, you know, twists and challenges. Like, you know, I did the U.S. and they really do a lot of the same comps over. And you'll see them in the house. And it's like, okay, it's week two veto. It's probably the spelling comp. And then it is. And you're planning for it. And I always feel like, oh, like, you know, I know it doesn't matter. That doesn't make the show. But, you know, to me, I'm always... I love throwing, there's nothing better than kind of, you know, catching them off guard and again, making them have to step their game up. And, you know, I mean, I love, like, you know, 2 years ago we did this triple eviction, which had never been done before. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. It was awesome that no one knew that was coming and like, how do you deal with it? And you got to think on your feet. And it was super dramatic. It was these really great people and they made some bold moves, you know? And, so that's the kind of stuff that, you know, we really, really love. And it's, you know, it's not easy. I mean, again, there's like 50 countries doing Big Brother, and in some senses everything's been done, you know, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of seasons worldwide, so it is hard to do things that haven't been done. And but we do, you know, we do work hard to do it. Like, even when I was in the U.S. last summer, the showrunner was flying out to L.A. on the weekends, and we were developing our season last summer. So that's how far we looked. You know, it was like 2 months after the show we'd already developed this year. So.
Right. Okay, well, a couple more questions before I let you go. And one of them is about childhood, your childhood and watching television. For me, I grew up in the late 70s and the early 80s. So stuff like The Incredible Hulk, The A-Team, Battlestar Galactica, that kind of stuff. That was, and then Magnum PI, that was right in my wheelhouse. What about you? Did you watch TV as a kid? And if you did, what did you watch?
Yeah, no, I've always just loved TV. So it's like, I do pinch myself thinking that it's all paid off. Like, I look at all the years of Big Brother, and it's why I got this job. And I've done some work for the NHL recently, and it's because I'm a big fan of hockey, and all these things that I've done is because I've been huge fans of. And I directed Hockey Wives, and it was because I was obsessive about watching all the Real Housewives and all those shows. So it is nice to see it pay off. Cause yeah, as a kid, I watched tons. I mean, we never had cable.
Okay.
So I was kind of not a cool kid. Like, and I would actually lie about watching Saturday Night Live. You know, I'm like, yeah, I saw Pearl Jam on it. They were cool.
Yeah.
So the shows I remember were stuff like, you know, like Growing Pains and, those are kind of like, you know, Who's the Boss?
Right.
These like probably terrible sitcoms now, but those are kind of the shows that Mr. Belvedere, remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those were like, I feel like all those sitcoms were kind of my jam.
It's like the whole ABC Friday night lineup, I think, was that show with Urkel in it.
Yeah, yeah. Family Matters, yeah.
Family Matters, that's right.
Yeah, Charles in Charge, all those, I watched them all.
Okay. Okay, so you mentioned Hockey Wives. So kind of as a wrap up, you're not involved in season 3 of Hockey Wives, are you?
Well, I am a little. So I did the full season 1,
yes.
And then I've done bits and pieces of season 2 and 3. So I've probably shot like 7 or 8 days of the season and then maybe a bit more of that on season 2. So
okay.
I kind of fill in when I can. Like obviously I'm very busy now on this, but I fill in when they need someone. And so I've shot some really cool stuff for the season 3 that's starting out soon, like some really cool dramatic storylines that have been kind of neat.
What I like about Hockey Wives, and no disrespect to the Real Housewives franchise, but I just feel as though Hockey Wives is just a better version for this country and makes more sense to be on in this country.
Well, I'm a huge hockey fan and
sure.
I love reality. So it was this kind of great marriage of these two to work on. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, hockey players are notoriously private. I mean, I really don't know much about the players that I love.
Right.
And so it was really interesting, especially like some goalies. Like, you know, I worked with Ryan Miller a lot and his wife, Noreen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really interesting to see that kind of behind the scenes of their life. And it's some really dramatic stuff of like,
yeah.
You don't realize, like, you know, this one couple, Emily and John Blum, who's was always up and down in the minors.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
He went to Europe, and now he's in Europe. And, you know, this season she's pregnant and alone in California, and he's in Russia playing.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to see that kind of side of it. And then, of course, you get hints into the players' lives and injuries and things like that. And it's the dynamic between the couples is quite fascinating. And definitely that show is, you know, it's kind of a lot more popular than I thought it would be working on it season 1. You never really know.
Right.
It's funny how many people tell me they love that show. And it does feel like a very Canadian version of that type of format.
Yeah. I mean, it's
a docu series, right? It's not,
yeah.
it's not heavily produced. Like it really is, you know, a docu series. And so you get a, instead of, you know, the kind of scripted, you know, you get less Chardonnay in the face.
Yes.
But the drama you do see, maybe it's not as a lot of it. It's real. So it kind
yes.
of better.
Yeah. It's for me, it's seeing, I can, you can relate to what these women are going through. They seem very, you know, they're all very down to earth and don't have the kind of, it's just everyday life for them. It's shopping, it's paying the bills, and it's taking care of kids and stuff while the husband is away. You know, that's just so much, I just find so relatable and so interesting to watch.
Yeah, and I think what people don't realize, I think when you think hockey, you think, okay, Sidney Crosby, they're making $8 million a year
yeah.
and all that. That is so the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
I mean,
there yeah.
are really just a handful of players that have that kind of security. Most of them, you have no, like, yeah, they make decent money, but they're probably only playing until they're 30. You may only get a handful of years, and then, you know, you could get traded at any moment, and we've seen that on the show. We've had couples that, yeah, get traded, and, like, just seeing how that affects their relationship. And, you know, it is really hard, and wives will give up their careers for the guy because they know they're going to have to move around. And
mm-hmm.
It was really eye opening to, cause even that's what I thought. I'm like, oh, they're all like millionaires and it's pretty cushy. And you know, it's not that easy.
Well, thanks to Trevor Boris for sitting down and speaking with Greg David this week about his entire career. Some of the stuff he's doing now, some of the stuff he's done in the past. And you can find Trevor Boris on Twitter @TrevorBoris. About as simple as you can get. Now, it gets a bit more confusing when it comes to Greg. I'll talk about me first. You can find me @AnthonyMarco. That's pretty straightforward. You can find Greg on Twitter @Greg_David. And you can find TVA on Twitter @TV_.EH. You can find all of the past podcasts by going to TV-EH.com and checking out the podcast tab at the top and listening to a whole bunch of past interviews there on our TV ABCs podcasts, where we do the long form interviews, and you can listen to our TV news updates every second week at the regular TVA podcasts. And if you want to support the podcast, please feel free to go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/TV_EH. And if you'd like to contribute a buck an episode or a buck a month, anything that you can chip in, it would certainly be appreciated. It will all go to a good cause and help us cover Canadian television better on the web than anybody else. Feel free to drop a comment after this post on the website, or feel free to get in touch with us on Twitter if there's anything that you'd like us to know about what we're doing. And that wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.